report to transporter room 3.
O'Brien here.
I need you in transporter room 3.
This is the captain. Meet me in transporter room 3.
Join us in transporter room 3.
Captain, we're headed for transporter room 3.
This is your favorite transporter room, isn't it?
You're listening to Transporter Room 3 with your hosts, Phil Perello and Scott Galora.
Energize.
Welcome to Transporter Room 3. Mr. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing good, Phil. Just living in the afterglow of hanging out with Deep Space Nine actors. No big whoop.
Yeah, rub it in, Scott. Rub it in.
How are you?
I was feeling pretty good until that. I'm doing all right. I'm recovering from some Star Trek Day news.
Yes.
I'm recovering from the awesome experience of seeing Wrath of Khan Director's Cut for the first time ever in 4K on the big screen with a decent crowd that was quoting along with the movie. One jerk off, a row in front of me, was on his phone filming parts of the movie.
Great.
While texting.
Definitely can get that 4K effect by filming off the screen with your
phone.
With your filming. Motorola flip phone.
Yeah, he started filming on his iPhone the funeral. At the start of the funeral when the torpedo lowers down. Like, why? Like, what are you doing? And he also got on his phone to text during Spock's death.
What the hell?
And the bright light is I'm emotionally invested.
Yeah.
And that light comes on. And it's like, dude, I know we've all seen this movie, but
yeah,
don't be an a-hole.
Yeah.
But I was nice to not be the only person in the theater quoting aloud under their breath to the movie. Some people louder than others. And this Jagoff, you know, he at some point he just said, he quoted Khan aloud, you know, did you know that a dish is best served cold?
Yeah.
It's very cold in space. Like, he said it aloud, like, dude, you are 50-some. Like, what is your... Never mind. Anyway, doing that's okay.
What does his age have to do with it?
Well, I guess, like, quoting the movie that annoyingly loud.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I was wearing my mask in the theater and I'm just whispering to myself. So I guess that's slightly more acceptable. but doing like your whispery Ricardo Montalban voice.
Right. Yeah.
In a public theater aloud. Like, if you're going to do it at that volume, man, you have to commit.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It's either go all the way,
or go home, baby.
Yeah. No, you're right. So, all right. Well,
that was the get off my lawn portion of Transporter Room 3.
We're going to talk a little bit about what happened on Star Trek Day, which was last week, right? Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about Deep Space Nine, Invasive Procedures, Season 2 episode.
Inspired by Scott's recent encounter with Terry Farrell.
That's right. Yeah. So let's get that out of the way real quick.
Explain for our listeners how you got that awesome opportunity with friend of the podcast, Justin Bolger.
Yeah. Our good friend, Justin Bolger, who has guested on the pod. He works with it's the video game Star Trek Fleet Command, which I guess is always incorporating different characters and ships and stuff into its gameplay. And
so it's a cool game.
They're bringing Deep Space Nine characters in. And so they wind up doing this sort of promotional thing with IGN, teaming up with IGN, and they needed a host. So I went out to the LA office to record a video roundtable with Terry Farrell, Colm Meaney, and Nana Visitor, just basically doing a retrospective for like the better part of an hour, looking back at the show, Deep Space Nine, and its legacy and stuff. And it was a lot of fun.
Wow, Scott.
Yeah, it was really cool. So I think that video is going live this week, I think. Like, we're
on IGN?
Yeah. So you guys can look for it. It's today's Tuesday, September 13th. I'm pretty sure it's going live this week. So if you want to check it out, give it a look. I think, you know, if you're a fan of Deep Space Nine, I think you'll find it interesting. So, but yeah, like, you know, behind the scenes, it was just so cool to get to kind of hang out with those guys a little bit. And Terry Farrell in particular, she was just, they were all really nice and cool, but like Terry Farrell was like, I think maybe, I guess her son is a big IGN fan. So she kind of was hanging around for a while after the shoot. And she was just so sweet and like taking pictures with everyone and like, you know, just chilling. And it was just That's awesome, man. Yeah. I was like, gosh, I was in love with Terry Farrell in 1993. And I guess I still am in love with Terry Farrell.
She seems like a classy person.
Yeah. She was nice. Yeah.
Scott, so. Do you think your new friendship with Dax, you think she'd be open to coming on the podcast and doing like a random trip through Dax's greatest hits?
No.
Okay.
I don't know.
You heard it here first, folks.
No, I don't know. You know what? I gave her my card and I was like, listen, you know, if you ever want, but her son's a big, I guess he's like an esports guy. Like, you know, he actually does video gaming. And so I was like, if you ever want to like, bring your son to, you know, for a tour of IGN or whatever, like I can totally hook you up. And so we kind of left it on that. Like she has my number, but like, you know, will she ever get in touch with me? I don't know, but of course she's more than welcome and we would love to have her on. So I guess we'll see where it goes. It's not like she suddenly started following me on Twitter or anything, you know? So we'll see.
What was the coolest story you got from any of them regarding like the making of the show?
Well, you know, hearing them talk about Avery Brooks was really interesting, and about how giving and mindful he was of his fellow actors and his cast. And like, you know, Terry Farrell talked a lot about how sort of young and green she was when she first started the show, and I guess she was the last one they cast, and so the production was already underway on the pilot by the time she actually was cast and got rolling. So she was kind of like, she felt like she was behind the eight ball a little bit in the beginning, and like she spoke about just how Avery Brooks really like kind of, you know, took her under his wing a little bit, and like when she was their first scene together, she felt like she wasn't really getting it, and she wasn't like finding her pace, and like she asked Avery off to the side, like, you know, can we work on this? And like he like totally like, you know, just was like worked with her on it to perfect it. And
then cool.
Colin Meaney was talking about how he thinks Avery Brooks is basically like a Renaissance man genius, and how he's so talented, and how much fun they had together on the shoot. So I thought it was interesting to hear them talk. And Nana too, I think, was talking about Brooks. And I think it's just hearing them talk about Avery Brooks as kind of a regular guy, because he is this sort of outsized personality who's sort of, in a way, he's become a little bit of a caricature, because we never really see him, right, these days.
Right.
He doesn't typically do the interviews and the
outside of the captain's documentary. I can't recall seeing him or anything.
It's pretty rare, you know. So to hear them talk about him and to talk about him with such like, you know, not reverence, but like just
fondness.
Yeah. And really to just, you know, like, again, like Colm saying how they just had so many days where they would just be laughing together on set all day.
Oh, that's great.
Stuff that really, I felt like it humanized Avery Brooks in a lot of ways, you know? So, but yeah, I mean, your brain definitely went right to where mine did, which was like, let's get these guys on Transporter Room 3 sometime. So we'll see. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but fingers crossed.
It better, Scott.
So, you know what? Do you want to talk, before we do Star Trek Day, do you want to talk about the new Blu-ray 4K sets?
Oh, yeah. Before we talk about the new stunning 4K collection of classic Trek movies that are out, a big thank you to our friend at TrekCore, Ken Riley. Mm. He recently hooked me up. Super kind, super, I know he said it's not out of his way, but it felt a little bit too this lapsed Catholic with all the Italian Catholic guilt to hook me up with finding me the collector's edition of the motion picture. Nice. And in the care package, he sent something that I am not ashamed to admit I teared up about. Fan Sets makes these great replica rank pins, and they have one coming out later this fall of the Combadge from TNG. And he sent me the Captain rank pin and the Admiral rank pin from Wrath of Khan era uniforms.
Nice.
And I teared up because I have one of those since I was 6 years old, along with the tunic and all that. And it was just surreal. My wife was like surprised at how touched I was right in front of her. So
did you know they were coming?
No idea. He said I threw in a couple of surprises, couple of goodies in there.
Nice.
You know, it was cool. You know, I was like, okay, cool. I don't want to know what they are. I want to be surprised. And I wasn't expecting that at all, you know, like, but
that's great.
It was cool. It was great. And I got a coaster from, I don't know where the coaster's from, but it was a coaster depicting the bar in The Big Goodbye, the Dixon Hill episode. I don't know what that's from, but it's awesome. And it's going in my house.
That's
and
cool.
I will use it on every beverage, hot or cold. It's great. And even better is these 4K discs. Like, I know if you patron Trek Corps Twitter feed, there was a lot of back and forth between people preferring the 2009 transfers over these new color corrected and much more faithful to the actual theatrical presentation transfers.
Right. Yeah.
There's some back and forth, and you know, looking on your phone, it's not really going to capture how the difference in quality and immersion that you would see if you put it on your brand new 4K TV.
Yeah.
Or a 4K TV. But these things are amazing. The motion picture, get the physical disc. The quality is much better than that 4K transfer streaming on Paramount
Plus. Okay.
It is the best remastering. I think it's like a standard bearer for the format.
Can you still see, like, how good does the guy look who's unintentionally in the frame when Shatner makes his first appearance getting off the shuttlecraft?
Okay, Scott, I haven't looked for him yet, but I'm going to find his ass.
I'm just wondering how good he looks in 4K, you know?
Right? But you can see, I saw this on the big screen when I watched Wrath of Khan, when they recycled the arriving at the Enterprise in space dock.
Yeah.
When they repurposed that footage, but you can see this guy's head poking out the window, looking on the docking ring as the pod arrives.
Okay.
And that's just a cool little beat. And it's the bonus features are amazing. There's these cool archival costume tests and makeup tests for aliens that they have. And they show an aspect of Cave Spock. Have you heard of Cave Spock?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, I didn't know about it either. So when we meet Spock in the movie, right before his Kalinar discipline, Spock, in as originally planned and scripted, Spock was supposed to be dwelling so off the grid, he's fashioning his own clothes, like out of whatever he can find.
Oh, wow.
Rags, basically, and he's dwelling in a cave. And you can kind of sort of see that outfit underneath what he finally wears, but it's not quite that. Like, he went, you know, very primal. So and it's very interesting to see that footage.
Huh. So, and that's despite the really cool, like, Northern California home it turns out he has on Star Trek Discovery. on Vulcan. Right?
That's right. That's despite that. Yeah. Spock was in a weird place.
He was in a weird place. For a
motion
yeah.
picture,
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful picture. Star Trek VI also has the director's cut and the theatrical cut on it. Beautiful pictures. The transfers are great. The sound design is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I put on the Blu-ray of VI and that Praxis explosion, we just moved, so we don't have our sound system set up, but our TV is, you know, has, you know, the in-speaker surround sound.
Yeah.
It's still delivered on just like that mix. I can't recommend them enough. They're really good.
Nice. Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't get them for some reason. I don't know why.
Wow. I'm surprised, Scott.
I wonder if something weird happened because I was on vacation for like 2 weeks. I was out of town and if I had like, yeah, I don't know.
Maybe someone grabbed them.
Yeah. I'm wondering, huh? Well, that's okay. I still have the VHSs.
Right. And you should only watch those from here on out with the Paramount.
Can you
attractions purple can, logo that comes in?
Yeah. Can you dub them onto VHS for me? The 4K versions
for you, Scott. I'll do it. I'll do it. Why stop at VHS? Why don't you go Betamax, baby?
How would the 4K print look on Betamax? I wonder.
I'm going to guess a little shitty. I'm just going to throw that out there. It might be a tad above crappy.
Okay.
But you know, I'm game to try out. I'll dust off my AV set from Com 1 in high school.
Yeah, very good.
These the waxy facial features of how the actors looked, especially in VI, because of the transfer process they did back when Blu-rays were just becoming into their own,
right?
It was over contrasted, and it made people have this waxy, not right appearance. Like Spock looks terrible. Spock looks like he's caked in pancake makeup, you know?
Right.
On the new transfers, they're much more natural tones. Yeah, it's not as clear or soft. And Scott and I would text to each other like when the originals came out, like, I think we kind of like the old ones more.
Right,
we
yeah.
can see more. Yeah. At the same time, like the fidelity on these images is very crisp and more filmic. The contrasts are much more solid. It's just a great set. I'm looking forward to triple dipping into this when they release, you know, a big, huge box set that is all next gen and the original series movies together. I'm sure that's coming. Or at least one big box set of each of them, you know?
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know it's coming.
Oh, it's got to.
Yeah. All right, well, you want to talk Star Trek Day?
So, a lot of cool shit happened Star Trek Day. We know we're a week out. The highlight for me was that Picard Season 3 trailer.
Yeah. It. Well, and we got a release date also, right? It's coming February 16th, which is a little later. I thought it might come in the fall, actually.
I had heard from a studio source that the plan was an October release.
Okay.
So but now it's happening in February. Yeah. And don't have kittens, to quote David Marcus. You will see an Enterprise in Star Trek in Season 3.
Yeah, you got to, right?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you see an Enterprise-looking ship in the trailer, but it's the Titan.
Yeah, I was stunned. That was an anticlimactic reveal for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised as well because...
Yeah.
Well, so the Titan is, of course, Riker's ship.
Right, and it seems to have gotten
established in like
a refit.
The books and stuff, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And then I think they mentioned it in... they might have mentioned... Did they mention the Titan in Picard Season 1 when Riker and Troy showed up? I can't remember if they did.
It probably did. I know that we see it in Lower Decks.
We see it in Lower Decks, right? So now this is like the Titan B, I think, or the Titan A, right? Like it's a new version of the Titan, I guess. And it seems like Seven of Nine is the, I think they refer to her as commander, but she seems to be the captain, right?
She seems to be taking it out, but I believe the showrunner said that she is not the captain.
Oh, okay. All right. So, so some time has passed since the end of the season two, I suppose. But you know, again, you get to see the old crew back in action a little bit more in this one. And that's kind of all I need to see right now. You know, like it's just seeing those guys. There's some kind of a catastrophe happens. I don't know if that's Starfleet Command or some kind of a giant building is destroyed early in the trailer.
Yeah, that looked like a Starfleet Command-esque place.
Yeah, yeah. And the old search for Spock space dock is still floating around, it looks like.
Yeah, with a bit of an augment. It had like some additions to it.
Yeah, totally, yeah. But yeah, I mean, you see Worf, you see Beverly, you see Riker. Riker and Picard are like, they're such like old chums now, you know, like their dynamic has really changed a lot over the years. When you think about how standoffish Picard kind of was with him in the beginning. But yeah, what's there to say? I'm excited. It looks, you know, looks cool. I just, again, I don't know why the Titan has to look like an Enterprise. That's the only thing that bugged me a little bit.
I think it's because the people making the show love those original movies and wanted to put their touch on them. Hey, that's what I would do. I would try to make a ship look like my favorite ship too.
Why not just have it be the Enterprise though, you know?
That's a good point. And I'm hoping come that season, we'll find out.
Okay. So that was Picard. Then there was, for Strange New Worlds, they played a new clip.
Yeah. Season Ortegas. Two.
Ortegas got some action.
Yeah, but she got denied that away team mission. Damn it.
She did. Yeah.
Wonder if she's going to have to go down there anyway and save their asses.
Yeah, maybe.
Stuff goes wrong.
She's super excited, right, to finally get to do an away mission because she's usually piloting. And then they're like, oh, actually, we need your ace pilot skills up here. So even though you're wearing the hat of the local people,
right,
you need to stay up here. So
I will say I like Pike's away team mission here.
Yes.
It's a little shorter on the sides. It's tighter on the sides.
Yeah. Not quite as high on the top.
Not quite as high. But I think he messes it up, you know, because you got to go incognito. But ship side.
Right, ship side.
He's got, you know, that freaking wave from the deleted ending of The Abyss going on.
Right.
You know, like.
And so we got the news of a new engineer to replace.
Carol freaking Kane.
Yeah. Carol Kane. Who, I mean, I always remembered Carol Kane as, this is kind of embarrassing, maybe, I don't know. I always remembered her as Latka's wife on Taxi.
On Taxi, yeah, yeah.
Right.
I remember her from that, Billy Crystal's wife in...
Oh, is she Billy Crystal's wife in The Princess Bride?
Princess Bride, but I mostly remember her as, what is it? Is it The Ghost of Christmas Future? From Scrooged.
Oh, okay.
Her ice, and she punches. She punches Bill Murray. No, it's not Future. It's Christmas Present.
Okay, I don't really know Scrooged actually.
Oh, you've never seen Scrooged?
I've probably seen it or seen parts of it, but I don't really remember it.
It's one of my favorite Christmas movies. Check it out. She's great in it. She's great.
Okay, yeah. So
also great. She's sporting a fanny pack. A fancy leather Starfleet fanny pack. Some serious engineering shit is about to go down.
Yeah, and she has some kind of a special badge next to her.
Very curious about that.
Her Starfleet badge too. I don't know what that is. But yeah, you're right. She's got some serious tools in that pouch, no doubt. So she obviously, we're not getting Scotty yet. Everyone assumed Scotty was going to come in when Hammer was killed off. But nope, no Scotty yet. I'm here for it. They described her as highly educated and intelligent. This engineer suffers no fools.
You can tell.
Her name is Palia. Palia solves problems calmly and brusquely thanks to her many years of experience. kind of sounds just like Hemmer, right?
I thought that too when I read that. Yep.
Highly educated and intelligent, this engineer suffers no fools, solves problems calmly and brusquely, thanks to her many years of experience. That's Hemmer.
A little bit. I like that we're getting like, you know, like our first like truly official series regular female engineer.
Well, we had B'Elanna Torres. Bite your tongue.
Oh, I'm wrong. I completely forgot. Well, okay, but she replaced someone. But yes, you're correct.
Okay. Well, what do you mean? This one's replacing someone.
Scott, I'm stupid. Yeah, you're right. I completely forgot about B'Elanna. I'm sorry, Voyager fans.
It's all right. It's all right, man. It's all right.
Is it though?
Voyager doesn't count.
Do you think? How excited are you for the thought of her character having scenes with Pike?
I think it's going to be great because I could see her being. She's a little bit older, right? She's she's been around the block a few times, and I could see her kind of put. Maybe being the type of figure who puts Pike in his place a little bit at times. Yeah. You know?
Good point. So
that's just speculation, but I don't know. I feel like, and I'm glad they cast, they cast someone who's a little older too. Like it doesn't have to be a young, you know, a 24-year-old, you know, whatever.
No.
Like,
I'm curious how her and Uhura will interact given how close Uhura was with the previous person in that part.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And when I interviewed the Strange New Worlds people at Comic-Con, Celia Rose Gooding, who plays Uhura, said that she basically said that in season two, that Uhura is still dealing with Hemmer's death as well.
That's sad to hear, but that's great to know for dramatic purposes in the show.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, you want to move on? Star Trek Discovery. We got the first look. Image of Michael Burnham riding a space dirt bike or something.
I love anything that reminds me of the Dune buggy chase on Nemesis. This is as excited as I can get for Discovery.
You definitely want to evoke Star Trek Nemesis in your promotional campaign
they are the farthest into the future of any Star Trek show, exploring like the unexplored future corners of the Final Frontier. And the first image is Michael making action movie face on a sand bike.
I don't love the image. I feel like Sonequa Martin Green looks a little weird in the picture because she is in the middle of like action, like you say, action movie face, like and it's sort of peak Michael Burnham in a way, the image, like of course Michael Burnham is in this scenario, I don't know, like on the sand planet out running whatever it is, like Discovery is I feel like Discovery is in a little bit of a position, right? Discovery and Picard's getting the benefit of the doubt for me because of the return of Next Gen crew, but both of those shows I did not love their most recent seasons, to say the least. And so I feel like Discovery also has to kind of re-earn my interest level, so we'll see what happens with that.
Discovery has such a charismatic cast, such an interesting, diverse, progressive, compelling cast, wrapped in a series that just seems like a series designed to go against the grain in ways that don't service it and don't service this cast. Like we have another MacGuffin again.
Yeah. Like
the series synopsis that was leaked feels like it's interchangeable with the season before.
Oh, you know what? I have it right here. Let me read it. And you're right. I agree 100%. Captain Burnham and the crew of the USS Discovery uncover a mystery that sends them on an epic adventure across the galaxy to find an ancient power whose very existence has been deliberately hidden for centuries. But there are others on the hunt as well. Dangerous foes who are desperate to claim the prize for themselves and will stop at nothing to get it. I feel like that's season 4, that's season 3.
Yeah, very season three, season four. I mean, it's different and similar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, so I don't know. I mean, I love seasons one and two of that show.
Same. I'm checked out, you know?
Yeah.
So, I'll watch the premiere to try to get roped back in, maybe the second episode, but
yeah,
I want to love the show, but it's making it really hard.
And I love the cast, you know, and they did a behind the scenes video, where Wilson Cruz walked around with a camera crew, and
but that was great seeing the sets.
Yeah. That was cool. And you know, they're all fun and lovable. He's interacting with some of the actors and
Tilly's back.
Tilly's back. It seems like, yeah. So we'll see what happens with that one. But I mean, they just said that's 2023. Oh, and we don't have an exact date. And for Strange New Worlds, I think they also said 2023. Obviously, yes. I mean, these are all going to come after Picard. Okay, Lower Decks. We just got a scene. I mean, obviously, we're in the middle of season three right now, and then we got a scene from an episode that airs in October, which was basically the sequel to the episode with I don't know if it was last season or the first season, where it was basically a Star Trek movie riff on the holodeck.
Yes.
This scene, I think, is from the sequel to that, where it's
yes.
Yeah.
That's episode 8 of this season, which we have screeners of, and I've seen it. Very, very cinematic sequence that is, and it's full expansion in the episode. And it was just cool to see Enterprise-y style ship, a Sovereign class ship in action.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I still haven't watched those screeners. Have you watched all 8 of them?
No, I just skipped to that
one. Oh, okay. All right.
By accident.
Yeah, that's cool.
I clicked on the wrong link and yeah.
Okay. And then, yeah, it's cool to see the animated version of it's the USS Wayfarer. But it's basically the Enterprise E, right? So that's cool. And then I guess was the last thing. Oh no, there's two more
Prodigy.
Things. Star Trek Prodigy. So
excited. So excited.
So weird the way they cut that season up, but we're getting the second half of season one.
Yes.
Next month. October 27th, it comes back. And they played a scene from that as well, right? Where Murph is morphing into something else now, the kind of bubble guy. And we saw Bill Campbell, or Billy Campbell, I guess he goes by, coming back as the outrageous Okona, an older version.
Yes. But I love seeing the bridge of the Dauntless and Admiral Janeway versus Hologram Janeway.
Yeah. Yeah, and like Hologram Janeway is kind of like, oh shit, the real version of me is chasing us.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, yeah.
And I guess they basically, because of the I don't remember the particulars, but the virus or whatever that's infected the Protostar, they can't even like open communications with Janeway to kind of explain themselves.
No, because it's just infecting the ship.
Right, so it sets up this dynamic where Janeway is kind of the adversary to our young heroes. But we know she's not bad. She just doesn't know what the deal is on this ship. So it's a cool idea, you know. So yeah, looking forward to that as well. I don't know if we know are they gonna split up the seasons again? Split up the season again the way they did last time, or are they gonna just play them straight through the second half of season one?
I think they're just gonna play the second half.
Okay, I hope so.
Of season one. I think that's, yeah, I think that returns, yeah, it's October 27th, yeah, like we said. But I don't think that's going to be interrupted, no.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah, and then I think just the last thing, which was not a TV show announcement, but the Khan prequel series that
Nicholas... Seti Alpha 5?
Yeah, is that what it's called, Seti Alpha 5?
Mm-hmm. Khan, Seti Alpha 5.
Yeah.
A podcast series.
Right. It's going to be a podcast. I guess you guys are going to have to make a choice. You either listen to that or listen to Transporter Room 3. I don't know. My choice. I know what I would choose, personally.
I would choose both. I don't believe in the no-win scenario, Scott.
So I guess it tells the story of Khan between Star Trek Space Seed and Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, what happened to everyone on SETI Alpha 5.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was originally...
After SETI Alpha 6 exploded.
Right, yeah. This is SETI Alpha 5. So they it was originally being developed by Nick Meyer as a TV miniseries, I guess. And mm-hmm. obviously that didn't actually... You know, for Kurtzman, and obviously that didn't go anywhere. So now they're doing it as a podcast, which makes sense. Why not? Right. So
right.
We'll see who they get to play the characters. I guess Khan's wife will figure into it. Right. Who, you know, left the Enterprise with him at the end of Space Seed. I don't know, you know, maybe some of his sidekicks from Wrath of Khan will show up in it as well. But yeah, you think you will listen to it, Phil?
Oh yeah. I'll check it out. 'Cause Nick Meyer, baby.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah,
I mean, the best Star Trek feature film writer ever. Like, come on.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe we can get him to come on and talk about it, actually. Maybe we can get him to podcast about his podcast.
Can you reach out to Lay and make that happen? Our friends at Paramount Plus?
Yeah, I will. Definitely.
Because you have IGN backing you. I have me and my blog, StarTrek.gov. It's an abandoned Model UN site from my high school that I've just like reskinned.
Wow, you were actually able to get StarTrek.gov? I figured it was
I can't back that up, Scott. That's just pure BS for the enjoyment of our listeners.
I figured it was like StarTrek_Phil_biggest_fan_GeoCities. You know, GeoCities.gov.
Yeah, but you can only access it via Netscape circa 1997. So,
all right. So that's Star Trek Day. I don't know. I feel like we talked about it longer than we thought we would.
Yes, we did, because we still got to go into.
Let's.
We got about 5 minutes here to break down invasive procedures. Look, one of the better season two episodes. It's a bit of a bottle episode.
Yeah, it's early season two. I haven't seen it in a while.
Same.
But you're right. It's better than I remembered. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about what we liked and what we thought could have been better.
So basically, Deep Space Nine is evacuated, but there's a storm of some type.
A plasma storm.
Plasma storm. So they just have a skeleton crew of basically all their most important officers just staying on board. And John Glover, genre stalwart, John Glover shows up as a Trill. Sort of with it's a little bit of Starship Mine action in a way. Where is it Starship Mine? What's the Die Hard
Starship episode? Mine?
Yeah, where these kind of mercenary types show up, and basically John Glover wants to steal the Dax symbiote from Jadzia. And he does, as a matter of fact, because he feels like he was robbed, and that he should be a host. You know, he has the right to be a host as a Trill, just as anyone else does. So it sets up some interesting ideas about the Trill, like, and that's what I liked most about it, I think. Like, first of all, again, but this is fairly early on in Deep Space Nine's run, you're learning sort of some things that you didn't know before. And like the idea that the Trill, you know, that only certain Trill get a symbiote, for example. Like, I don't know. I don't remember when we learned that or not. It might have been this episode, but it's an interesting idea, and especially in the Star Trek world where usually you can have anything you want, right? Like the egalitarian, you know, want for nothing Star Trek universe, where basically if you just, you know, if you contribute to society, you can have or be whatever you want. And like, that's not strictly true, right? Because like, there is a sort of higher class of Trill, which are the symbiote, the hosts of the symbiotes, right? Like Jadzia. And she even says, like, my mom and my sister didn't get to host either, you know, like not everyone gets to. But I just thought that was it's an interesting idea that is set up here.
And never see Dex's sister.
Yeah, or O'Brien's two brothers.
Two brothers, right.
They named all these siblings in this episode who we never get to meet. Yeah, I thought to some of those ideas, and even like the idea of John Glover has this girlfriend who's helping him with the basically the, you know, the heist operation of kidnapping Jadzia, and Sisko is kind of saying, like, listen, like, you know, once he gets the Dex in him, he's not going to be the John Glover that you know anymore. Like, he's going to be a different person. He's going to be John Glover plus Dex. And sure enough, that's how it plays out. Like, he basically leaves her behind, I think, right? Or tries to. He's kind of moved beyond her, which is how Sisko is able to save Jadzia ultimately, because he talks the girlfriend into kind of handing over her phaser so he can go after John Glover. But I thought that was interesting as well. Like, Jadzia must, even though we never really see Jadzia without the symbiote, like, the Jadzia we know must be pretty different from the Jadzia who existed before she got the symbiote inside of her.
Yeah. You know? Right.
So that's what I liked about the episode. Just those sort of ideas about what it is to be a Trill and how, you know, how it affects the host and also the people around the host. What do you like about it?
Well, I like that it affected the new host in a way that gave him a new hairstyle. Like, either, like, the host got the symbiote got put in him, and his first order of business was to get rid of that shaggy, awkward, nerdy, shy guy haircut.
You know, I'm looking at it right now. It's almost a Vulcan haircut before the Trill.
Almost Vulcan, yeah. And I like that they set him up as this timid, awkward, don't hurt anybody. Don't hurt anybody. And then he's the first to hurt someone.
Yeah, he shoots
a laser blast.
Let's take a poll, right? It's too bad we can't have an interactive session here with our users, but who do you think is going to get shot in that scene? Sisko, Quark, Kira, Dax, or O'Brien? Who's most likely to get shot?
O'Brien.
Yeah.
Hands up.
Of course. He randomly picks someone, right? And it's
of course. They just love battering that guy. I liked Tim Russ's performance as a Klingon with a battle scar on his dome. Klingon has no honor though.
Yeah, and it's also interesting, like, and I, this might be a first also, but like, Klingons who are, like, not including Worf, but Klingons who are not in, like, Klingon military uniforms. They're just wearing, like, civilian clothing, right? They're not the traditional, like, militaristic Klingon. They're just, like, these mercenary types. Also, the whole, like, Sisko meeting the John Glover Dax, you know, who, of course, is his old friend Dax, right? Old man Dax. Mm-hmm. And how they're taking a trip down memory lane. Like, remember my bachelor party, remember this, remember that. And they're kind of laughing, and Sisko pulls the rug out from under him. He's like, yeah, remember when we discovered the wormhole together, which of course was a Jadzia memory. And he's like, that was, you know, John Glover says that was one of Jadzia's proudest moments.
And right.
Meanwhile, she's in the infirmary dying because she doesn't have the symbiote inside her anymore. So, just again, you know, and Sisko having to confront, it's his friend, Dax, but at the same time, he's not going to give up on Jadzia. So it's just a cool dynamic that they set up in this episode.
It is cool. It is very cool. What is a little comical, a fight breaks out in Ops. And Sisko's coming down face when Megan Gallagher's character corners him with the phaser, says, I don't want to have to shoot you. The face he makes, it looks like he's half laughing, but not, I don't know.
Oh, really? I didn't catch that. Yeah, really?
Check it out. But you know, as a bottle episode goes, like the stakes are high-ish.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah.
And they commit fully, like, okay, he's going to get it. He's going to take Dax he's going to take away the symbiote, and we're going to deal with the consequences of that. And I like how the episode shows that not all Trill are destined to be a host.
Yeah.
And what that means and how much of their society is dependent, or how much of their self-worth, in his case, is dependent on that status.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I was saying earlier, right? Like, oh, you didn't get into Harvard, right? So
yes,
now what?
Yeah, what do you do? And if I didn't get into Harvard, I would not hire alien mercenaries to hijack my admission.
I mean, that's what I did when I didn't get into Harvard. But the weird thing is,
now you tell me.
The weird thing is, I didn't even apply to Harvard. So,
so you just found alien mercs to do your bidding. Cool. And it's also implied that the woman is a companion, right? Someone he freed.
Yeah.
And was kind to. Okay.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Totally. Yeah.
Cool.
Which you know, she's like, so it's kind of like she's super loyal to him, right?
Right.
And the idea that even though he's going to change once he gets the Dax symbiote in him, she's kind of like, it doesn't matter. I'm still going to be his, you know, his partner. I'm going to be loyal to him. But then, and she is, seems to be willing to be, but then he kind of like, he doesn't want her anymore. And so right. It's, yeah, it's,
that's messed up, but yeah. It's good drama though.
I
also like Sisko's action hero moment where Varad, that's John Glover's character, he's going to leave on the runabout and take his little slug buddy with him. And Sisko has a standoff with him. And Varad's like, you won't shoot your old friend. You know, you might harm the symbiont. You know, you're not going to do that. He walks away and calls Sisko Benjamin. Sisko blasts him anyway with his phaser.
Yep.
Says, don't call me Benjamin.
Yep.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing yeah. moment. Yeah.
It's just, that's a very Sisko moment, right? It's
yeah.
Like, yeah. Big time. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. And you know, Glover is kind of, he's good in this episode. Like he became at some point sort of high camp in a way. The stuff he would do, like, you know, of course, I mean, he's like the evil scientist in Batman and Robin, which I guess came out after this. Like he's the scientist who's Poison Ivy,
yeah. Right?
And then he played Lionel Luthor on Smallville for years. And so he was very, and you know, a bunch of other stuff. But so he kind of like would sometimes play a really heightened villainous kind of character in the roles he got. But here there's some texture and layers to his character, which really works well, you know.
It works very well. I agree.
And you do buy that him and the, you know, it's only a few scenes really when once he has the symbiote in him, but you do buy that him and Sisko are sort of old friends who've become estranged, instantly become estranged because of what has happened.
Right.
Also,
his enemy is literally his friend's literally inside his enemy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and they've merged, so it's super complicated Star Trek-y situation. Also,
some
Kieran
great ideas.
Kira kind of gets her ass kicked a little bit by the
actress. She does. Speaking of, in that fight with T'Kar, that's Russ's Klingon character. She takes a hit to the face. It seems.
Okay.
In real life, Tim Russ clocked the stunt woman.
Oh man.
Playing Kira.
Ugh.
He felt so bad about it, but the stunt woman was like, according to the trivia for the episode, was like, no, keep going, it's fine, it looked really good. And they finished the fight right then and there.
Really? Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Now, Tim Russ was also part of the crew that invaded the Enterprise and Starship Mine, right?
Yes, he was. So here's a good double feature, Starship Mine and Invasive Procedures.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and then finish it off with Neelix. Tuvix. Tuvix, yeah, wash it down with the Tuvix episode, which I can't believe we've never talked about.
I thought we have talked about Tuvix.
Maybe we have, actually. Let me look it up, actually. I have the doc open right here. I don't think we have. Well, you know what? Maybe we've probably talked about Tuvix many times, but I don't know if we've ever done a full episode on Tuvix. I'm not seeing anything here. So
if you subscribe to our Patreon, you might be in for a treat.
Yeah, we might have to do it. Might have to do a Tuvix special
episodic commentary, baby.
So anyway, that's kind of the down and dirty review of Invasive Procedures, I guess. I'm not sure that we necessarily have to dig into it a whole lot more, mainly because we're kind of running out of time here. But it was nice to revisit Deep Space Nine for sure, especially after talking to those guys the other day. And right. I think we always say, oh, let's do more Deep Space Nine. But I think we really should try to make it so, as it were.
It's too bad we couldn't have your buddy Terry Farrell on this, because it's one of her favorite episodes, according to Memory Alpha.
Okay, well, we'll try. We'll see what can happen. I guess if I just ride my bike out around outside our house for a few days, maybe I can.
I wouldn't do that, Scott. Also, Quark is a shit in this episode. How is he still on this show after this point? How? You can't just put your hands on your hips and go, "Oh, Quark."
Right. Yeah. He does attack the Klingon though at one point, right? So, but he also kind of got them in this jam in the first place too, which is not great. So,
well, this little quote from Armin Shimmer in the Star Trek DS9 Companion about this episode touches on that.
Oh, okay.
Armin Shimmer dislikes this episode because he feels that Quark commits an unforgivable crime.
Yeah,
I worry when Quark doesn't get punished for really sizable crimes. It makes the character less important, since his acts trigger no consequences, and it makes Odo look a little foolish, and that he's the law keeper and he can't get this little troll punished.
Well, yeah, because I mean, he almost got Jadzia killed, basically, right?
Right.
So, yeah, he's right. He's right about that. I don't remember now. Do we see John Glover after they take the symbiote out of him? Like, I'm wondering if his hair goes back. Oh wait, let me see it.
I mean, we see Jadzia say, you know, I have a little bit of his memories, and they're also sad.
Right, that's right. You know what? I'm scrolling through the episode right now. It looks like you see him on the bed.
On the bed, yeah.
I think the hair is kind of halfway between the two versions. I think it's reverting back to
it's OG.
Yeah, it's reverting. It's not fully back to its OG state, but it's getting there.
But he never comes back in that episode Facets. You think his symbiote would show up, given that she still retains.
That's a good point.
Even though she was only in briefly with him, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, where all of her past hosts kind of manifest, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Huh. I wonder why. It's too bad. All right. Well, so yeah, you guys write in, let us know what you think of this episode. But Phil, do you want to do the you want to move on to the
to our Replimat?
Yeah, we're already on Deep Space Nine, so we might as well go to the Replimat, right?
Let's do it.
I'm going to the Replimat to get something to eat.
What's your pick, Mr. Scott?
Are we allowed to do musical concerts at the Replimat?
You can do whatever you want. It's our show, baby.
As opposed to non-musical concerts. Okay, Roger Waters from Pink Floyd. We went to see him. We got my son a end of the school year graduation gift last year. He's really into music like that, and we got him tickets to see Roger Waters.
Cool.
Yeah, he's an older gentleman now. You know, these aging rock gods are still out there touring. It's insane. I mean, he's in his 70s, I think. But the show was amazing. Like I know he's working his way across the country. So if you guys have any interest in Pink Floyd or Roger Waters, and he's coming to a city near you, I highly recommend it. It was really good. And he, you know, sort of classic rock legend type big show with big, huge screens and, you know, lots of not just audio, obviously audio because it's a concert, but lots of video and laser lights and all that stuff going on. But also just his willingness to play a lot of his classic Pink Floyd stuff. But he plays some of his solo stuff, which is cool. But to actually be there and like see him do songs from The Wall and from Dark Side of the Moon and all the, you know, the sort of iconic Pink Floyd stuff too. It was just great. And I was actually surprised at how funny and charming he was as well. I'd never seen him in concert
before. That's cool.
Yeah, like you kind of think like, oh, maybe it's the guy from Pink Floyd. Like maybe he did The Wall. Maybe he takes himself seriously. But he was actually really kind of self-effacing and cracking jokes and stuff and having a good time. It was awesome. We had gone out of town. We went on a cruise and we got back from the cruise. And then we basically the next day had this concert to go to, and we were like exhausted.
I bet I would have been beat.
But we went, you know, we had to head into the city for it, and it was so worth it. It was great. So, yeah, that's my pick. What about you?
My pick is not as cool.
What amazing rock legend did you see in concert?
Does watching Bosler's Elvis count?
it's sort of related, right? I'm dying to see it, actually. Is it
very, very good?
Okay, all right.
I did not want to see it. I was like, oh, this is gonna be crap, but I was enthralled. I saw it in theaters. I watched it with my dad recently, and my wife. They both dug it. I think it's very well done. It's a good biopic. The best part is the 1968 concert that Elvis famously performed. Not just because there are Star Trek posters in the hallways of NBC where the concert is filmed, but when he sings this ballad, "If I Can Dream," it just wrecks me. It's great. I would invite everyone to check it out, especially if you wanted to see what Star Trek: The Experience looked like circa mid 1995,
1997. Yeah, that's right.
It's a cool moment in there involving the exterior of that hotel that housed that great experience.
Right. I heard about that. Yeah. Yeah. It's on HBO Max now, I think, right?
It is, sir. It is.
It's highly available. Yeah. It's on my to-do list for sure. We're pouring through Breaking Bad right now. Doing a rewatch. So we're just about done with that. And then I think I want to, Elvis is like high on my list to get to next. So, all right, cool. You want to move on to the red shirt?
Attention all crew. Please don your dress uniforms and prepare the photon torpedo coffins. It's time for the red shirt of the week.
Our red shirt, well, he's technically more of a red jacket because he and I don't know when they decided to coordinate this, but he and the rest of Khan's followers from Wrath of Khan on the Bridge of Reliant, they decided off screen to not only take the jackets from the Reliant crew that they marooned, but they also decided to wear them over their shoulders like capes.
The way Angela Lansbury might wear like a cape.
Like a shawl or something. But it's almost like I can imagine them taking them off the way Non from Superman 2, you know, wants the, or I'm sorry, the way Ursa.
Yeah, no, you're, Ursa wants the Ursa all the badges. Yes, yeah, you're right, yeah.
But our red shirt is, I don't know what his name is, but I'm just going to call him Lack of Steady Footing Guy. Because when they hit some turbulence going into the nebula, he's standing over Khan's right shoulder behind the safety bars.
Yeah.
And he hits a little bump and he touches Khan's shoulder and Khan just gives him this look and he's like, sorry. But he just looks like a dope that bumped into you in line at the movies or something and wasn't paying attention or something.
You know? Right. I can't imagine that the Khan Noonien Sun took very It took,
I mean, he took less umbrage than I thought he would, man.
What do you think happened to that guy? We have him listed as a red shirt though.
He dies. He dies. You see him when the phaser beam scrapes the bridge, he's done. Also cool seeing it on the big screen in 4K is for the first time I've ever seen the phaser beam. You can see the black burn line being cut in the wake of the phaser passing across the hull.
Oh, that's cool.
It's awesome. It's an awesome little boot. That's cool.
Is that when the net inexplicably falls out of the ceiling?
Is there a net that falls from the ceiling?
I feel like I always felt like to me, like it looked like a big, like fishing net falls out of the ceiling.
Oh, well now I got to check that out.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know.
So many sparks. I'm
watching on my VHS copy, so I'm, you know.
Not Betamax? Pick a format. So that's our red shirt.
Okay.
I'd pour out a drink for him, but he will literally get tipsy. He might slip. You know, so We'll just let him lay under that cargo net rebel.
Yeah, that sounds good. All right. Well, yeah, everyone, as always, write in. Let us know what you thought of the stuff we talked about today. Everything from the new 4K sets to Star Trek Day to invasive procedures to the guy who made the mistake of leaning on Khan for a moment. You can write to us at transporterroom3@gmail.com. You can talk to us and like us on Facebook. Hit us on Twitter, of course, at Scott Calora, at Phil Perello. Please remember to subscribe to us and also review us on Apple Podcasts or your podcast service of choice. And then, of course, you can find us on Patreon where you can support us there. We have multiple tiers, lots of different things that you can take advantage of there, ranging from text chats with me and Phil to bonus episodes, which we're kind of building up at this point. We've got several bonus episodes you can access at this point.
Yeah.
So check us out there on Patreon. But yeah, I think that'll do it for us today. Right, Phil?
I think so, Scott. Thanks for doing this with me, man. And thank you all for listening.
Yeah.
Till next time, we'll see you on Gravette Island.